Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Hosman here on KLBB, Club 1220. Well, Kyle, we've talked about all year the weather. It's finally, the sky is blue, the bikers are out today. Did you ride your bike in today?
It's a little far for a bike for me. I'm in Woodbury, so.
the Harley group is out today. I was pulling in today, and there was two waves of Harley guys out today. Yeah. Must be an event going on today, but what
a
great day
those two.
To be on the bike today. Not a cloud in the sky. The weather's warm. The river looks nice. Here we are, which we've been waiting for.
Yeah. It's really been great today.
Anyway. Well, I'm sure you can't wait to get out. We'll make this a short, sweet hour then. We got a great guest today. We have Tom Linder, who you may not know his name, but he's been responsible for much of the great content here in town at Channel 4, 10, 11, and done a lot of great things here in local media. I do want to do one quick plug, though. KLBB is sponsoring TC Media Now's Newsapalooza 2, another evening of history and humor. Stan Turner, myself, and a group of media panelists will be there, including some video from TC Media Now. Video I may not show on the web, but I'll show it to a live theater. Tickets are $15. It goes to TC Media Now, which is a 501c3 nonprofit, at the Heights Theater Thursday night, May 7th. Newsapalooza 2, an evening of history and humor. Those that went last year, it was a 20 below night. We still had some seats sold, so hopefully in the heart of May that we will not have a blizzard. I can't guarantee that because it is Minnesota and we may have a superstorm, but should be a good night. We'll have some fun. We'll have some video. Ask questions of your favorite panelists, and KLBB has been great enough to sponsor that. Newsapalooza 2, May 7th. Tickets are available at tcmedianow.com or at the door. Our guest today, Tom Linder. Tom Linder has been part of media landscape here locally. I hate to embarrass people, but since the 1970s, you've been part of media. You started out as a writer at WCCO-TV, correct?
That's correct. As a matter of fact, I started 3 years before you were born, Tom, so that gives you a little indication.
You've done your homework.
A little bit.
Tell me a little bit about you were a local guy, and working at Channel 4, that's not just something that anyone can just walk in with an application and go in and do. That had been, did you have a connection to Channel 4, or did you know a professor? How did you end up at Channel 4 as a very young man at that year?
You know, aren't you kind? you know, I think the word serendipity has some value here. I was attending summer school at the U of M, and one of the professors was a photographer, Daryl Brand. He worked for the documentary unit. And he said, you ought to come on over and see if there's any work. So I tried to get on the More on Sunday unit, and they were full. But they said, you get on the hallway, they got a news department. Why don't you see what they're up to? Well, one thing led to another, and I had an interview with Ron Hanberg, who was longtime news director and general manager and a friend to this day, and got the job as a dispatcher, which had some writing duties as well as everything else. And, you know, wouldn't change that for a thing.
And you had aspired, were you a journalism major in college?
I was. I had actually started off in English, but found myself not writing a lot. And a professor said, you might want to go across the street to Murphy Hall, where the journalism school is. And that too, was good.
And was your goal to in journalism to be a writer? Was it to be a reporter? This is not too long after the Watergate era, and I think a lot of people from this generation were really driven to journalism through investigative reporting or through lengthy, Washington Post-style articles. What was your drive?
You know what? You nailed it. The goal then for a lot of us of that era was to change the world in a positive way. We saw corruption. We mm-hmm. saw things going wrong in government and society and thought journalism was a good avenue to bring effect some change that way. And there's a lot of examples of that actually working in those days. And, the business changes off and on mm-hmm. over time. But that was a motivator for a lot of people. Few of us thought we were going to be the next Walter Cronkite or anything of that sort. I have a much greater face for radio than I do for television, so that, of course, was a part of it. Even though I did some reporting in the early days in Duluth, great experience, but having that kind of control as a producer just was more my speed.
So let's talk about that. You go to this TV route, which still, I think, even in the 70s, TV, keep in mind, was 25 years old as far mm-hmm. as what the medium was. Newspapers had been around since the beginning of time.
Right.
And TV was still, what I compare it to what the internet is now, still not having figured out what it is that TV's role was in journalism.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't known at that point yet for, here in Minnesota, Channel 4, Channel 5 had some great reporting, some great investigative units because we are a very news-conscious community. But you look at the time, L.A., Chicago, New York, it was still a very visual medium with celebrities and people, and how do you draw people in for commercial time? We hadn't, you know, hit that quite yet here in Minneapolis, Minnesota. But you're still able to change the world. You walk into that basement newsroom at Channel 4, and I have never been there, but of course I saw the video of it.
Of course.
The low ceilings, smoke. That had been just a lot of adrenaline in your pumping through you to be able to do more.
Well, it was absolutely that. It was an opportunity to kind of watch the sausage being made, as people like to say. In my case, I was studying more theory and practice at the U of M, but then we'd take the bus downtown and spend 4 to 6 hours in the dispatch shack, and you would see the product get made. You would see how all that work came together, the checks people had on each other. The good spirit that a Dave Moore could have walking through a newsroom, things of that sort, that made it seem, boy, this is the best job in the world, because you get to learn something new every day. It's cliche. They say the job changes every day. It's true. That was the case. People were finding things that were new and finding ways to report the stories of this area. I think people who have lived around here any number of years realize early on, if not right away, that this has been a very good media market for many, many years, even compared to the New Yorks and L.A.'s that you talk about. That's why the New Yorks and L.A.'s try to steal people from here.
That's right. And think of this also. I talked to a lot of guys behind the camera. And, you know, we've had here in Flashback Twin Cities a lot of people on the on camera who our audience knows. But I think that just importantly, it's people like you who were able to rein in talent, be able to provide copy. As talented as Dave Moore, Paul Majors, Ron Majors is, they can't produce a whole newscast. It takes a whole team of people to do that, and not even the reporters that are out there. There's someone that was lugging around a camera, which a lot of the Daryl Brands of the world were breaking their backs carrying cameras around, and Daryl's a good friend of the show.
Sure.
You did something that a lot of professors in anyone's era has recommended doing. Go to a small market and learn how to run a station. You went to WDIO Duluth.
Oh, and it was a wonderful experience. That's absolutely it. You get to do almost every job you can in the station. And if anything, that experience teaches you what you don't want to do more than what you maybe want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And you start ruling out certain things in the process. But you get hands-on experience. You meet a ton of people. You have good days and bad days. You see how the camera works and doesn't work. Full experience. And you're all in your probably mid-20s, early 20s. So you all kind of get together, compete all day, and then go together and party all night together. And it was a wonderful experience, actually.
It's amazing that so much of that, and even working at a station like KLDB, and I did the traditional routes doing electronic training, and I'm sure our Brown graduate. You went to Brown. Did you go to Brown, Kyle?
Yeah, I did.
And you took a lot of courses at Brown. Now, did you learn more? And I'm not knocking schools I paid a lot of money for, or you did, but when you came here and you worked here on your own for, we'll say, a month, that was worth at least 2 years of college.
Oh, absolutely.
And working at a station here at KLAB, we're one of the few locally owned stations here in town still.
Congratulations.
You know, we grind, you know, we grind the sausage here. We occasionally have some, you know, we do on-the-spot equipment checks. We do, it's an experience. I know that having watched WDIO Duluth at our lake place, and a lot of people here in Stillwater probably still watch WDIO Duluth when they're at their cabins in these nice summers. There's a mainstream anchor there, Dennis Anderson. He was there. Any era you watched WDIO, he was there, and you were part of that.
I was lucky. Danny hired me. Danny had the nickname of the DA of Duluth, and he was as likable and kind and connected to not only Duluth but the Iron Range.
Mm-hmm.
He had tentacles in those two areas of the state that kind of made him a local legend up there. He is one of those anchors who I think it never went to his head as it can for some people. He seemed very salt of the earth, seemed connected to what he's up to.
And that's why he was on the air for 40 years, because not only did he have a great, booming, authoritative TV voices, but also knowledge of the area. They weren't, you know, luckily here in Minnesota and even in Duluth, you know, we like people that have some knowledge of the town before we put them on the air to start anchoring our main newscast. And, you know, I give WDIO Duluth credit for not going younger, not going consultant-driven, not going Hollywood on us. They kept him on there till he retired on his own.
Oh, he did. He absolutely. He actually retired twice. He left once to go to work for a mortuary. because he had a hobby, if you will, of mortuary sciences.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's different than bird collecting or any of those other hobbies you might...
I collect tapes. I have no position to say anything to anyone.
I know. It's guaranteed work, mm-hmm. And things of that sort. But he did that for a couple of years, came back into the business, and part of it was the demand to have him back, I think. Mm-hmm. But he was great in dealing with younger people because he knew younger people were going to come in, want to do everything, make every mistake in the world, and he'd find a way to help you through those times and never blow his top.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he kept calm in the business. He appreciated the work of others. I'm glad you mentioned the point earlier about the team it takes to get a broadcast on, especially the technical side. I mean, a lot of broadcasts are miracles every day when they happen, and viewers don't often know that.
And the unfortunate thing is they don't have time. I've noticed, and I watch local news, not as near as much because, like anyone else, and like you, we're connected digitally, and I don't need to watch it as often as I do, but I do watch it, and they don't do credits very often anymore. A long credit roll to see all the people's names that sometimes spend as many hours as an anchor working on a product all week and to be able to have their name in the credit. And I'm sure they do when I'm not watching because they probably air it every few weeks when they have 30 seconds of time they need to fill. They air some credits. But a lot of people on those newscasts that are working into this day still, even in the automated digital world, people are still putting that product on the air.
Well, they really are. And that is kind of a shame that credits have gone away. At least some stations you'll find, like one day a week, maybe a Friday, they'll run them. The network, I've noticed at the end of their newscast, they will often sprinkle in two or three names a day. It's in some ways a small token for the work that people do there. Because part of that team effort, actually, is much as you say, you grind the sausage here. Just because your job is as a writer or your job is as a technician or as an anchor, there are things that need to get done in a hurry to get the whole product done.
Right.
And, you know, there's some days somebody brings water to somebody that needs it, and that's not in their job description, but it helped them from coughing throughout the newscast.
Right.
Small things like that, but
as
it works.
A young guy used to think, how come no one ever coughs on the news? I thought that I can't go out of a coffin or sneezing. How can Paul and Di sit there and never cough or sneeze?
We used to put special devices in both of their throats that make that happen. Otherwise,
this is where the secrets are found out.
Yes, please.
Tom Linder, he's formerly of Channel 11 and Channel 4, CCO and KAIR. You came back to Minnesota, as many of us want to come back to our hometowns, work in our hometown, and know the streets we're driving on. And as much as we love Duluth here, there is that point of Duluth where it's a frozen city on a lake for about 6 months. And I know that it must have been a welcome chance to come back to Channel 4. They were in the process of moving into their new studios,
right.
And you were able to... You were a producer then, and you went from that role to writer to producer. And how did that transition go about?
You know what? I actually worked at WCCO three times, and you'd leave and come back, and the running joke was if you wanted to get a raise, you had to go away for a while and come back in, and it generally worked that way, so it had to. It was excellent to come back. I will eternally be grateful to Karen Boris, who kind of kept me in the loop while I was in Duluth, and there was an opening at the time at CCO where they were looking for a young producer-writer. Weekends, I think it was, you wrote and you ran an assignment desk and did other odd jobs. And she kind of put a good word in, and I had a chance to meet with Ron Hanberg again, and he fortunately said, yeah, come on down, we'll give you a try. But you're right, coming home is it's something that happens a lot in the Twin Cities market, as I think you found in your interviews over time.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people go away, get experience elsewhere, which is wonderful. You get to see a bit more of the world. But you still want to come back here because you do know where the streets are. You also know how to pronounce certain names that that get people in trouble. And there's a sensibility here, I think, doesn't always exist elsewhere.
Minneapolis, I think, has been a destination spot for many people to go to a bigger market. I think they come here and they think, this isn't so bad.
Right.
I mean, yes, we have blizzards and below zero weather, but pretty nice place to work. And I know this. You've had talent as a managing talent that... I got this great offer to go here. I'm leaving. It's been fun. How often do you get a call back 6 months later, a year later? Hey, you know, do you have any spots open? Because
that is a wonderful question. I would say upwards of 70 to 80% of the time, and I may be a little more conservative on my estimate there. The reverse, as I think you're alluding to a moment ago, people would come here from another place, wanted to work in a station that had certain credentials, go back to wherever they were before, and they'd come in their mid to late 20s, and pretty soon they'd meet someone, and pretty soon they'd be in committed relationships, and 2 years turns into 10 years, and there are people in this market that are still doing that. This becomes their new home.
Mm-hmm.
Which says a lot about us, because let's face it, the weather is the weather. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't keep people from it.
And sometimes Minnesotans, and I can be, I'm from here, I lived here all but 3 years of my life, we sometimes can be a little bit introverted. So when people come from other cities, you come from New York or come from Chicago, you're a little bit more blunt. You're not, and I hate to use the word passive aggressive, you're not, we have that Swedish German part of us that we keep to ourselves. We don't have a lot of block parties. But people come from other cities, and, you know, we're very, very polite, and then we go home and we have a cup of coffee and we're done. Mm-hmm. That's one of the differences of people coming here and, you know, realizing that, and then having to, you know, warm up to it, and they do, and then they become us. I think that once you've lived here over half your life, then you get to say you're a Minnesotan.
One of the things I've noticed of folks in that situation, Mike Pomerantz comes to mind. Mm-hmm. A few years ago when he moved in here, and he and his family moved to one of the western suburbs, and they would entertain people on the weekends. Mm-hmm. And he said, what is it about saying goodbye three times when you have people over? He'd come in every Monday, and he'd want me to update him on Minnesota, etiquette. And I said, well, you know, you start, and then you move to the next part, and pretty soon your coat's on, and you go to the door, and it's a kind of a process. And he said, because he's from New York, spent a lot of time in New York and Florida. And, you know, it was pretty straight and narrow, I should say.
Well, most places, I think, like New York, are full of what Stan Turner calls migrant professionals. There's no New Yorker in New Yorker. Imagine the show Taxi. Alex Rieger's telling everyone, well, he's a boxer, he's this, I'm a cab driver. There's very few New Yorkers actually in New York.
They're all
from somewhere else who've become New Yorkers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the people that are actually, listening to media are actually on the streets, buying product, they're from New York. But the people that are presenting New York are not from New York.
We had a younger reporter, very talented, came to CARE a number of years ago, and she's now actually working, she's from New York, and went back home. She's on ABC in New York City now, but was checking off a station to get some experience. And she came here, and because of her interest and talent in politics, we sent her to Iowa for one of the caucuses.
Mm-hmm.
And before, first time ever for her, so before she got in the car to drive down, I just reminded her, I said, you know, it's kind of farm country. I said, but you'll know Iowa when you get there because of the gorgeous hills and the mountains on to the east. It's a spectacular view. she could smell BS from a mile away, but still thought, well, he wouldn't lie to me about that. Well, of course, she gets down there and says, yeah, he did, and had some fun with it. But that aside, I think people, even when they come here for a short period of time and leave, there's a pocket full of good memories they bring with them or take with them.
You did something that not many people have the opportunity of doing. You went from Minnesota then to the CBS affiliate in Chicago, WBBM, which is a legendary station in its own right. That is a really big deal. That's the third biggest market in the country. And you, here in Minneapolis, you had that opportunity. What was your role in that challenge?
I was hired at BBM to produce the 10 o'clock news, a job I was doing at the time.
Was Bill Curtis the anchor at that point?
Bill Curtis had just left to go to CBS Sunday Morning, but his partner, a guy named Walter Jacobson, was still there. And a gentleman named Don Craig, they brought into, he was anchoring with him. And it was a very intensive kind of station. There was a lot of turmoil at the time. Mm-hmm. I was brought in as kind of a sacrificial lamb, I think I learned out later, but not in a bad way. I shouldn't say it could have been a bad way. I didn't take it as a bad way. I'd do it again for a short period of time because it taught me another way of doing things in that market. And I think partially because of what I was able to produce, I got recognized by the station across town, the NBC O&O station, where Ron Majors was, and a fellow named Dick Reingold, who hired me when I left BBM while I was down there. So, great experience, but the breadth and width of the news, quite a different...
Was there a point when I first went to Chicago, and I was there about a week, I thought, what did I do? I thought, I could have just been very happy living and I thought, what did I get myself into? Because I think many people, especially young people as myself, and I'm sure you think, it's just a little bit bigger Minneapolis. It's just a little bit bigger Minneapolis. Same weather, same people. It is a completely different
place. It really is, Tom. And I think Paul Douglas, if you haven't had him on before, he will tell you a story of kind of wide-eyed going into situations like that. I think all of us do when we go down there. Many people have come from here to there. One of the things I heard early, I kind of sized it up myself, actually, is I realized being down there that there are only three stories in Chicago. Mm-hmm. There's crime, there's sports, and there's politics. And every day, the daily news was kind of keeping score of all three.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who got hurt crime-wise, who's in or out in politics, and who won the game. And it was this recurring energy for that. Because if you could do a good job on those three areas, Chicago.
You know Chicago.
All right, you made it.
Yeah, it's. We were talking a little before the show started about politics in Chicago, and you know, really, you mentioned Ron Majors. Ron Majors did a great job, and I agree with you on this. Watching him in Chicago, he knew politics, and that is. Well, I think you know sports too, mm-hmm. but that's two big things to be able to be respected. And to get the audience perspective, you know your town. And Ron's from California,
right.
From Washington.
Exactly.
But he went there, and I think that there's a video on TC Media Now when Ron first went to Chicago, and his bosses were impressed by his ability to be able to rattle off facts from Chicago, the players, the people. When this happens over on you know the north side and Lincoln Square, he knows who the alderman is to get a you know 5-minute sound clip from him.
And a guy like that can pick up the phone and get his call answered,
right.
And have people call him back. He was the first guy, I guess, I worked with who I could truly see a photographic memory. You hear mm-hmm. about people with those. He would glance at a copy, a piece of a text, and make it his own. He'd just look up at the camera and own it, and you'd sit in the control room and go, wow. Very talented that way.
You survived Chicago.
Yes, I did.
We'll say flourish. We'll say survive. Flourish Chicago.
Well, I went from third to first on the NBC station. So, yeah, I'll take that as a plus.
And again, it wasn't only because of Ron Majors. That's because people like you that you're producing news at that point, correct?
Right.
You're producing
mm-hmm.
news.
Right.
And you came to be the executive producer of Channel 4.
Good memory.
And what, now, tell, I know this, but tell the audience, but what does the executive producer do that the producer does not do? Or what is. A lot of us know that only from the Rachel R. Moore show and what Lou Grant did to what Mary did. So tell us in the real world what that meant.
Well, you know, that gets defined different places and different times. But generally speaking, an executive producer is the supervisor of the producers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what does that mean in day-in, day-out duties? Producers have a lot of details to take care of. In the course of an evening newscast, I bet a producer makes 100 decisions.
Mm-hmm.
What story is going to go where? What's the story going to be? This and that. The executive producer, if it's a good relationship, will help them in those decision making.
Mm-hmm.
We'll also be looking ahead to the next day because the producer has to be very focused on that day. We'll do some writing. We'll make sure if stories are going to be coming in late to accommodate that. Also do the administrative stuff. You know, check time cards and mm-hmm. payroll and the not so fun stuff, but the stuff that makes a business run. And always kind of looking at the bigger picture. I've always considered the job as you've got 1 foot in the trench and 1 foot out of the trench.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the luxury of time sometimes to see what's going to go on after
mm-hmm.
after prepared. Executive producers take lunch. Producers don't. So there's that everyday event that happens.
The other great thing I think is about the era you came into that as a producer and executive producer is it really was the. We'll call the Renaissance, but it was if TV news had a highlight in its history, it was the 70s and 80s because budgets were big. I think that stations were willing to invest a lot of money in their product, and not just those, you know, the three newscasts, but also on documentaries and investigative units, especially Channel 4. Channel 4, Ron Hamburg, is, you know, I think
right.
a lot of that coming from his, you know, More on Sunday.
Yep.
And I have tons of video on TC Media Now that, you know, Project Lifesaver or Project,
right.
you know,
right.
went to Vietnam when no camera crews are going to Vietnam, going to yeah. Sudan with Pat Miles.
Right.
I mean, and here you're being able to manage this and be able to be part of this.
In no way am I going to take credit for all of that. I did not manage all of those aspects, but I had a piece of it,
mm-hmm.
and I would be working on the news side that contributed to these other things you mentioned. But the fact that the stations made those kinds of commitments, that station in
mm-hmm.
those days, budgets, people told me used to be, how much do you need next year? And they'd talk a little bit, and it'd be over with.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fantasy nowadays, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Things have changed, and it's become a lot more corporate run and things of that sort. But there was always the mission of what was the journalism that we're going to do?
Mm-hmm.
How is this going to help people in the community? What kind of issues are going to be addressed that maybe haven't been heard of yet that we can bring a spotlight to? I think they all, the stations in those days would see themselves just as much competitive with the papers as totally reliant on the newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
Some of that equation has changed with time. It was a growing medium. CBS was a very strong network. A lot of support with CBS and vice versa. That's why WCCO probably lost 6-8 people to the networks over time.
A lot of talent from Channel 4 did go to the network. You know, go make Bill Stewart comes to mind. And you know, Bill Stewart, who a lot of us on the show know, you know what unfortunately happened to him.
Sure.
But I'm thinking even Skip Losher went. You know, when he went to Washington, he went to CNN, which cable news network. That was a novelty, and he went there and he flourished at CNN. Well, let's take a quick break. I'm going to come back and talk a little bit more about Channel 4 and then going to that place over on Golden Valley, which a lot of us might know as CARE. We'll be right back with Tom Linder. He is the former news director, former producer at Channel WCCO-TV and CARE-TV, live at Twin Cities after this.
Your new truck is waiting for you at River Valley Ford of Baldwin. Outstanding rebates on all remaining 2014 F-150s, and the all-new 2015 150s are arriving daily. The 15 F-150s have an exciting new look and incredible feel on the road. If you need a little more towing power, you owe it to yourself to check out the Ford Super Duty. We have them in stock and ready to move. Shop, compare, and find out why so many of your friends and neighbors choose River Valley Ford of Baldwin.
You know what I like? A good spicy Irishman.
Ooh, and I love a struttin' Tom.
Oh, what about Reuben or Rachel?
And how about that drunken Wilbur?
But you cannot forget about that stuffed Molly Malone, because those are just a few dishes at Pub 112 that are sure to snare the senses and subdue the appetite. And of course, after dinner, enjoy a nightcap at Molly Malone's Whiskey Lounge.
And of course, an Irish pub will have all your favorite beers on tap.
So here's to a long life.
And a merry one.
A quick death.
And an easy one.
A pretty girl.
And an honest one.
A cold beer.
And another one.
Pub 112 in Stillwater.
Shopping for a car? The best place to start is CarMax.com. At CarMax.com, you can compare features, prices, and more on thousands of high-quality used cars and trucks in our nationwide inventory. You can even transfer most cars to the store nearest you, a fee may apply. It's the easy way to see actual prices and tons of pictures and find the car that's perfect for you. Log on to CarMax.com and start shopping today. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Ready to take a voyage through the sounds and styles of some of the world's greatest musical performers? Hi, this is Mike Martin, host of Martini Mix, and every week I'll bring you timeless greats of music, time-tested artists like Count Basie, Frank Sinatra, Tony Bennett, and many more. I'll bring you the perfect blend of music, nice and cool, served straight up on Martini Mix with Mike Martin.
Martini Mix, each Saturday afternoon from 5 until 7 on Club 1220 KLBB.
Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond with our guest Tom Linder. We were just discussing Tom's career working at Channel 4, working at working Duluth, Chicago, came back to Channel 4, and then opportunity came knocking to go to what was then, shockingly to a lot of people in town, became it was the number one station in town, and CARE TV, traditionally it was WTCN TV, was the station you turned to for reruns, and then you turned it on if you didn't have a, you know, if you were too lazy to get up and turn the TV dial on. And even people that worked there during that era will still mention that. Great programming. They did great children's programming. News struggled for a long time at Channel 11 until Gannett came in and invested a lot of money in cameras and talent and reporting.
All true. I left CCO with a slight detour of a couple of years at TPT, now it was KTCA in those days, and had just a real good experience there doing long-form journalism, doing hour-long shows, content-driven as opposed to profit-driven, if you will, things of that sort, and just a solid group of people. If you watch the credit roll, you mentioned credits earlier, you still see that on Channel 2, and a lot of those people were there when I was there back in the late 80s. So, but that made a transition for me to come to CARE in 1992. And what had happened is Gannett had bought the station and had made those investments you just realized. And what I was told at the time is that their audience was beginning to plateau a little bit. They had made some very big gains. They took the demographic audience away from CCO. They were doing things in a very different way. News was being redefined. There were softer stories, if you will, and more community-based stories, things of that sort. But they were starting to plateau a little bit in their numbers, and part of what they wanted to do is up the ante on traditional hard news, things of that sort. That's kind of my background. That's where I had been bred through the stations you mentioned earlier, and that was part of what we discussed in my coming over to work there at the time. And I got in there, and it was just a fabulous experience to kind of help be part of that change, learn how to tell stories in slightly different ways than CCO did all that time. and just a real energy of a station on the momentum, and to be part of that energy was a lot of fun.
And you ran out with Pat Miles from Channel 4. So
absolutely,
she
saw her for the second time.
And she did some great she did some great specials. And she was doing, I won't call them Barbara Walters like specials, because she wasn't doing these interviews to inflate egos. And she was doing some real newsmakers. I mean, she had she had Norm Green on when no one was talking to Norm Green. She had Denny Green on when no one was talking to Denny Green. Mm-hmm. She was able to get call people and have these great specials that to preempt national programming, to have put local programming on. It's not a common thing by affiliates, but you put Pat Miles specials on, and those were some good programs.
Those started at CCO, of course, and mm-hmm. that was one of the reasons I think Kara was interested in Pat, among many other reasons, is to do those programming. They did some things very smart. They make sure those programs were funded and they could be carried mm-hmm. out. They put some quality people. Jane Helmke comes to mind. Mm-hmm. She produced those with Pat, along with any number of their skilled photographers. But she helped develop them. Jane, of course, is news director at Care Now. Has been there, I think, she started in fourth grade, I think.
Well, it's been
a long time.
When she was in fifth grade, she did some sports anchoring on a morning show.
You've seen it, indeed.
I found this, and I tweeted it to her, and she kind of gave me the... Well, thanks for that. Yeah, exactly.
That would be Jade.
Yeah, right.
She's probably worried about it the rest of the day, but
right.
And she looked great doing it.
Yeah,
I know the video you're talking.
She did a good job of it.
But those were a wonderful way, those Pat Miles programs, to mm-hmm. kind of bring that CCO audience, if you will, over to Care at the time. Let Pat continue to do what she was very good at, and bring some other people to the fore.
So, what did you do to integrate hard news, the Channel 4 CBS style, the Ron Hamburg style hard news into 11, which was it really, I think what they had done was found the CCO radio market of community-driven news,
mm-hmm.
and it did it very well. I think that, in all due respect, I think that the competition didn't quite figure out what was 11 doing really well. And I think it was doing what CCO radio had done since 1950.
Sure. The line for many years, which you can't out-care Care,
mm-hmm.
and people would try that and do different things, and school groups I'd speak to at the time would say, when you have call letters like Care that they had gone after to secure, you can't do a Walter Cronkite newscast necessarily with mm-hmm. that. But in the same breath, caring has a serious side,
mm-hmm.
and people do want to know what's going on in the world around them and the bigger world. And I was lucky enough, I think, to come at a time when there was an appetite for it, and there were people there who had had that in their backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
So making that kind of a transition or a tweak wasn't a horrible task, and doing it in a way that the video was such a player. I mean, it's television.
Mm-hmm.
Video is always going to be a major player, and Care was producing some of the best pictures in the country at the time, and right, arguably so today too.
One that comes to mind, and you weren't there at the time, but still, the Fridley Tornado is one of my most requested videos on TC Media Now. And when I get tape collections from people from their basement, I have, I think, 10 copies of that tornado, because it was such a mesmerizing piece of video. And that, I think, right there is really, like, people were looking at Care, like, Care has some cameras, and they, if I understand, that moment, they had a brand new portable cam. They were trying out the Aquitennial that night.
That's right.
And here's a tornado.
That was, I believe, Tom Impey was the photographer.
Mm-hmm.
Max Mesmer was
the pilot.
And it was Fridley. But before it was Fridley, it was Brooklyn Park,
mm-hmm.
and it was in that area. I, oddly enough, my career being what it was, I was in Chicago at the time.
Mm-hmm.
The day that that tornado hit, and they captured it, everything kind of stopped. They put that up on the satellite, and we were watching at the NBC-owned station in Chicago, so we could see what was going on. I remember that was the same day that the first pictures of the Titanic had been made public. And, it seemed like that was the story of the day. Who's going to top something like that? Well, then about 2:33, whatever it was in the afternoon, maybe later, this happens.
Mm-hmm.
And I was shoulder to shoulder with Ron Majors, mm-hmm. and a gentleman named John Coleman, who did weather for many years on ABC. Mm-hmm. He was the weather guy at WMAQ in those days. And we were watching this video, and Coleman, who had a real science background as well, mm-hmm. as his showmanship and all the rest, said, "This has never been recorded before. This is a unique view of how these things develop and twist and turn and the whole works." Make a long story a little bit longer. At 10 o'clock at night, I was producing that show,
mm-hmm.
and we just said, I decided, let's throw out whatever we had as a lead, and I let those two guys go for probably 3 minutes, which is an eternity in a 10 o'clock newscast,
mm-hmm.
just watching that video and mm-hmm. commenting on it, And, you know, the irony was, or the beauty, I guess, is Paul Majors is reporting it in Minneapolis the same time Ron Majors was reporting it in Chicago. The same story.
Now, if you've not seen it, go to tcmedianow.com because, you know, I've had Paul Douglas on the show a couple times, and you look at the high tension wires being pulled from the ground. Who had ever seen, you know, video or film of a tornado that? And I haven't had to talk to Max Mesmer yet, but I still wonder, you know, what were you thinking going on that close to it? But you know what? Any fines that the FAA gave them was made up with those awards that are sitting in the care lobby right now.
And I think he was getting that instruction from the station, too. Don't do anything that's going to necessarily endanger you. Max had Vietnam experience as a pilot. He's many years of experience. And as I subsequently found when I came to the station, they were using a zoom lens for much of it, so there's more distance than it appears to the eye. But he was also following it in a certain rotation that doesn't want to necessarily pull you into the tornado. I'm not a weather person. I'm not a, you know, what's called a pilot. But those were the things that they were doing on the precaution side. And instantly, that's one of those, nowadays we call it viral. Mm-hmm. It wasn't viral in those days, but it was instantly watched around the world.
I think, and just to go back to your role at 11 to bring some hard news to it, you had some great reporters. I think of Bernie Grace, Alan Constantini, Dennis Stopper. These are guys, I think, that they really flourished when they had some direction of hard news stories, and it wasn't just a robbery that happened, but they're doing, you know, week-long investigative pieces. They were doing, you know, pieces that had been tertiary done by 4 and 5, and you not only were able to do some community-different news, but also bring some hard reporting to it.
You know, thank you for that, and thank you for all of their hard work. I mean, it again, back to the team effort that it takes to make that happen. There was an appetite to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes when the competition is on its heels because there's change, you can keep surging ahead as the station. And it proved that CARE was not losing any viewership by going to those harder stories, those more meaningful stories. They had already started. They were doing the extra long before Dimension came around, for instance. And they played at the end of the newscast to kind of get a sampling. But the stories weren't always, they were more community-based. They were always the things of that sort. Not always, but most of the time. To take that venue and to kind of add a little more meat to some of those bones, if you will, was very appreciated by viewers.
And you can't escape the business part of TV news because you have to have good lead-ins. And I think that CARE, despite NBC, and by the way, Channel 5 was able to figure out a way, you know, a generation before, to have a number one newscast with terrible lead-ins.
Right.
And CARE had some terrible lead-ins and was still able to find a way, because you did survive the Jay Leno show.
That's true. And to KSTP's credit, they also had a wonderful lead out with The Tonight Show, which ruled in those years. And so they were able to perhaps play to some of the end of the show, if you will, as well as beginning. But sure, there were moments when NBC was a distant third. But then there were magic times when you know, ER and some of those shows helped out.
I think NBC's either number one, number three. They don't really have a middle ground ever. Because
that's a good point. You're right.
You go from the golden age of TV to the Cheers era to the you know, Seinfeld era, and now we're in that, you know, that low world again. So I think that, you know, you find one good show again, they'll be number one again, and then we'll wonder why we, you know, no one ever watched it. But you know, the Jay, and I, by the way, I come from a guy who likes Jay Leno, and the Jay Leno show,
No, I think Jay Leno will be the first to tell you that didn't work, but, you know, the checks didn't bounce in his case, so it turned out. You know, it's interesting, you mentioned the lead-ins, because there's a real discussion in the industry nowadays about what is the future of broadcast or cable cast, television, satellite cast, in light of all the streaming video that's happening. This week alone, Jerry Seinfeld said TV is over. Of course, he was speaking to advertisers trying to sell comedians in cars drinking coffee. And
which is funny.
It's a hilarious segment. The records show that 100 million people have seen those things, way more than would have seen his television shows.
Right.
So he's working that angle. It's I'm sure, irritating broadcasters at the time. But there is a new kind of world that's rapidly coming upon us that changes the dynamic of a lead-in.
Every medium is in love or dead, whether it be movies, radio, or now TV. Every medium's, you know, the industry said it's going to be gone. I think that, you know, looking at TV, people are still watching video on a big screen. And I think that I did, and I was not on the air last week, but Channel 4 did this piece on me, and I'm a bit self-serving sometimes on the show here, but Channel 4 did a story on me. Now, a lot of guys, you know, in my contemporaries, don't sit down and watch the news at night. But I got a lot of texts saying that they saw it on Facebook, they saw it on Twitter, and they watched that. And I believe that, you know, the TV news is going to survive. It's how to get that product out there in non-traditional methods. And you worked at a station in, I have to ask about this, Anchorage, Alaska.
Yes,
you,
indeed.
And I've been to Anchorage, okay?
Oh,
and
wonderful place.
Wonderful place. That, I want to know what your experience, first of all, how did you end up in Anchorage? How did that happen?
Well, it was wonderful. When I left CARE, one of the first phone calls I got was from a longtime professional friend named Marcy Burdick, who was a senior vice president for a company called Shures Communications. They're based in South Bend, but they have stations around the country. They have newspapers. And they had a situation in Alaska where they were looking for someone that could kind of serve as the role of a consultant.
Mm-hmm.
And originally it was, could you be an acting news director, interim news director for, I think it was 90 days.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at my wife and she said, Alaska? Well, you know, sure. So we went in, I think it was September. She came up a little bit later. 90 days flew by.
Mm-hmm.
The boss turned to me up there and said, any chance he could extend this? Make a long story short, we were there 7 months through the winter. For the record, most snow ever received in Anchorage happened to be that winter. And where you folks back here were, you know, playing golf in December and January.
Every day.
But what happened is all my friends in broadcasting would say, what's it like up there? You know, what's the news like? And I said, it's kind of like news we were doing 30 years ago, but I do that in all respect, all due respect.
Mm-hmm.
They were very much in tune with Alaskans, what their needs were.
Mm-hmm.
The interactive part of it was fabulous, the way people would, if you screwed up on the air, they'd be the first to let you know, but the first to understand how it might have happened.
It's a very untarnished part of the country.
Oh, it is amazing
and
that way.
When I worked there professionally, not in media, I worked professionally for a couple months.
Right.
And I was there, there was this RNC that went on here in town, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then they announced this governor of Alaska, which no one had ever heard of. And I'm in the Marriott in Anchorage, where I was living.
Got it. Uh-huh.
Within about a day or two, the news trucks rolled in. I don't know how they got up there, because I'm not sure how you drive up to Alaska, but all of a sudden there's news vans, there's choppers, there's videos. The lobby I was staying in, where I was just hanging out because I was, you know, one of, you know,
sure,
five people staying there. It was the media junkies.
Right.
A word I can't use in there.
Yeah, yeah.
The media junkies were there, and we'll call the former governor of Alaska. I remember her parents were just walking around, you know, going to the Ben Franklin store or whatnot.
Right.
And there's, you know, Fox News are seen rolling behind them trying to get some shots of their truck. It's just an area that never had, you know, if we would have that here, we'd be used to it. If it happens in any big city, they were not used to that type of...
By no means. And they got just as much warning as anyone else did.
Mm-hmm.
It just happened. I mean, the McCain people made their decision, and there she was. The station I worked at I wasn't there at the time of this, came about a year after, but they had the huge advantage of having a satellite truck.
Mm-hmm.
The company that owned them had made that commitment prior. They kept it alive. And it was basically a truck that would feed all networks because there were very few outlets in Alaska at the time. I think it's 80% of the state has no roads yet.
Mm-hmm.
So getting around with a truck and facilities like that isn't what it is down here in the lower 48. But boy, when that exploded, it was amazing.
But working in Alaska, that had been, again, you're reteaching yourself things like, hey, I don't have to do that, or this is how I used to do it. I'm going to type this up and, or, you know, hand it to someone. I'm not trying to say they didn't have, you know, all the technology they did, but I'm guessing that, you know, we're a very technical advanced market here. Hubbard, we can thank him a lot for pushing the envelope a lot in satellite news gathering. I remember, and I told this before, when I was watching the news, and when Canterbury Downs was first opening up, there'd be Jeanette Harrison in front of the Canterbury Downs field at night. Well, this is where it's going to go, because you could do that.
Right. Weeks from now, there'll be a development here. Yeah, that was kind of deleted. I think you're absolutely right in terms of the technology wasn't quite where it would be at Alaska, but that has changed in the last 3 years in some remarkable ways. I mean, the station I was at sure has made a huge commitment, built a new station up there, put in all new equipment. Getting around the state is still the same issue.
Mm-hmm.
I would laugh because people back here would say, you know, what about the budget issues up there?
Mm-hmm.
I said, I have a bigger travel budget in Alaska than I had in CARE
as
a news director. Because you need it to get around.
Due to the capital, to any government, you need a chopper to go to get...
You cannot get there by land.
No.
You needed to take a boat or a plane.
Mm-hmm.
So those kinds of things. You know, not to be a Chamber of Commerce person for Alaska, but I can't wait to get back and just see it in a non-working capacity. We took as much advantage as we could being up there on our weekends and what have you to see things. But it is an amazing frontier, and it still is the frontier in many ways.
No, the moment I got there, and I went there for work, but you go there for work, and again, like anyone that came here to work, it's a pretty nice place to be. And I can understand why people have lived there for their whole life and they don't want to come. They don't want to come to the domestic 48 states with all of our problems. It's a great place, especially if you go in the heart of summer. I went to the Alaska State Fair when I was there. And
Balmer.
It was similar to our state fair here, but it was just so like a county fair with a state fair. It was great.
You know, nearby the farm area around Palmer is a bit of a history there, where during the 30s, when farmers in Minnesota and Wisconsin were having a rough go of things, some of them were moved. They signed leases to go and move to Alaska and be given land and houses, and they farmed that area. And that's where some of that Minnesota-like accent you can still hear is in those farm areas up there. There's adventure everywhere up there.
So a quick break. We'll come back here with Tom Linder from at KLDD, Flashback Twin Cities.
Advance Auto Parts knows what makes a car guy a car guy. It's the courage to take on the greasiest of jobs, the guts to stare down the belly of the beast and replace a radiator. It's fearlessness, and it has no patience for dead batteries. That's why Advance Auto Parts offers free battery testing. And if you buy a new AutoCraft battery, we'll even install it for free so you can get back to your next big project. Advance Auto Parts, for guys who love getting under the hood.
Most vehicles, most locations. See store for details.
700. That's 700. Now, normally when I say this, you'll remember the numbers of a famous British spy. But I'm asking you to remember 7009. You see, Quickfire Pizza now delivers to Stillwater. But you need to know the number. 439-7009. Quickfire Pizza. Baked in just minutes. Then delivered to you in Stillwater. So remember, 7009. Because Quickfire Pizza now delivers to Stillwater. 651-439-7009.
Club 1220 KLBB presents the Community Calendar. The Carpenter St. Croix Valley Nature Center is having its third annual birding festival this afternoon until 4. Bethany Lutheran Church in Star Prairie is having their annual Spring Fling Variety Show tonight at 6:30. The Stillwater Knights of Columbus and Tri-Parish Faith Formation Group are holding a pancake breakfast this Sunday at the Knights of Columbus Hall. It's from 8 until 1. Funds raised will go towards the World Youth Day pilgrimage. Non-perishable food items are also being collected. Hudson High School students are presenting the comedy Harvey tonight at 7 and Sunday at 5. St. Croix County's Earth Day celebration, Recycling Magic, is being held Sunday at YMCA Camp St. Croix in Hudson. It's from noon until 4. There will be a good-to-be-green magic show. You can create crafts of recycled products and meet animals from the Carpenter Nature Center. If you have an item for the community calendar, send it to me, Jeff, at klbbradio.com.
Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond, with our guest Tom Linder. And Tom, you know, just kind of wrapping back, you know, back to your Twin Cities experience, you were, you know, running news at Channel 11, and you left in the era of, you started there in the era of typewritten news copy. You leave in the era of Facebook, Twitter, bio web pages, blogs.
Live shots being done with phones and live streams and things of that sort, right.
Did you think, I remember going to Disney World many years ago and seeing the innovations of the future, okay? And someone talking to someone on video, and I thought, wow, that's going to be incredible. Did you think that you were going to be able to look at a news product you created on a phone or anytime, you know, day or night, and to do what we're doing right now?
Surely not in the early 90s. I mean, those visionaries are called Jobs, and they made wonderful companies happen and whatever. But no, I don't think anybody in the business truly saw that as what was going on. I think a lot of people watched things start to happen to newspapers and didn't realize quick enough that that could happen to television in terms of cutting revenues and things of that sort.
And I think the newspapers did not understand until I think they're surviving, but I think the cut was, it's been a tough road for them to kind of bounce back from that. I think TV at least tried to embrace the internet early on with websites or even with trying to interact with viewers.
And let's face it, television has video. Mm-hmm. Even though it was harder to put video online early mm-hmm. on, people were seeking it. Mm-hmm. Viewers and users are so far ahead of the media on issues like that, I think, mm-hmm. because they had an appetite to see it, to have portable and mobile video. Wasn't there? Newspapers had to not only learn that new skill, but try and put a new paper together with 20% fewer staff and things of that sort.
Perfect storm of media consolidation of the Telecommunications Act, and then just the way of the business. I think that even the last 5 years, I looked at like the last 5 years, which, by the way, goes by like in a blink. You know, you talk about, you know, your dandies in Alaska. The social media aspect of, I used to check the StarTribune.com a dozen times a day.
Right.
And now, you know, like anyone else, I have a phone that I see the news feed of, and I assume that if I don't see it on Twitter or Facebook, that it didn't happen. And then occasionally someone will say, well, didn't you remember what happened, you know, in city government or whatnot? Oh, no, I guess I didn't
you know,
catch that.
I saw some research about 10 years ago now, and it was a young woman, probably in her early 20s, late teens, whatever, and they were interviewing a number of people about why they didn't watch media, why they didn't watch news, things of this sort. And her answer, very honestly, was, well, I don't need to watch the news because the news will find me. And a bunch of us gray hairs were scratching our heads at mm-hmm. the time going, the news will find you. And now I know completely what she's talking about. She didn't need to go searching for those things.
And the news director, did you find it now, you know, somewhat frustrating, and this is, by the way, if you've been told, I want to get your take on this, that there might be a segment of reporters that they don't need to do that shoe leather kind of, we'll call it the Bernie Grace reporting, where you're
right.
up at all hours, day and night.
You're meeting people, you're doing what it takes.
Mm-hmm. They're trying to produce a story from a desk, right. from a computer.
Right.
And also, did you have to question, like, where did you hear this from? And where did you get, you know, where did your source from come from? Did you find that happening more in this internet era than you did in, we'll call it the, you know, the on-the-street reporting era?
You know what? I think if you have systems in place, you mm-hmm. probably don't have to do as much of that. The shops that didn't have those kinds of checks and balance systems mm-hmm. in place, they had to deal with some of that more. But the mere volume of content that people were all of a sudden having to put out,
mm-hmm.
Not only online, but as you mentioned, blogs and tweeting things and the stories and then multiple versions of the stories, mistakes can happen.
Mm-hmm.
People would pull video or a still picture off of the internet and put it in a story. And lo and behold, we get the letter from the lawyer saying, you know, we own that picture and we'd like a dandy amount of money to have you use that.
Mm-hmm.
No one thought twice at the time. They did the second time.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of stopped at that point. But that was all going on at the same time to do that. And I think checks and balances are always a wonderful thing. Vetting of stories will help. Lord knows there's been examples in national media lately of...
Well, I think...
Who looked at that copy?
Rolling Stone? I think that, you know, Minnesotans, I think that they won't tolerate the things I think that other people tolerate. I actually, you know, I think that... You know, Brylins may come back, but I don't think he's going to be as popular here as he was before if he does come back.
Yeah. No, I think so. I think a telling tale with Brian Williams was when he had greater interest in doing the Tonight Show, apparently, than doing the NBC Nightly News.
Time of our era. Tom Linder, thank you so much for being on today.
Thank you,
sir. We'll have you on
and
again.
If I can just take a second.
Please.
The work you're doing is godsend, because a lot of old media is getting lost, and you're finding a home for it and keeping it alive, so congratulations.
I appreciate it. We'll see you next week here in Flash with Twin Cities on KLBB Club 1220.